Welcome to Manager Tools. Flavor of the Month Pushback, Part 1. This cast answers these questions. Why are my directs pushing back on my changes? What can I do to overcome the pushback I'm getting from my directs? How can I make sure more of my management changes get implemented? Well, if you want answers to these questions and more, keep listening. Here we go.
Folks, if you haven't heard, we have started providing virtual effective manager conferences. We've already had two of them. They've been sold out. I think we started the third one now on the website. We'll be starting one about every week. There are a series of 2 to 3 hour virtual sessions limited to 30 people using Zoom. We've already gotten great responses from people in the sessions that have started. Our net promoter scores are the same, whether they're virtual or not. We're doing the best we can under the circumstances. And if you're looking for management help, that is what I would recommend. So come to the website and check out our virtual effective manager conference.
Well, not unusual, Mark, where managers, lots of managers trying to implement change, right? Try to do things differently. They could push back from their directs. And this kind of foot dragging can drive people nuts.
Yeah, and unfortunately, the solution usually is to politely and gently bulldoze the foot dragging.
I love it. It's like a bulldozer wrapped in velvet.
Politely.
Politely. A polite bulldozer.
Yeah, so if you've been a professional for a few years, guys, you've probably heard the phrase flavor of the month. Somebody has a new idea, but the rank and file are kind of hedging their bets. They believe the boss won't follow through. We've had a succession of managers like this. The new person comes in.
We'll wait them out.
She changes a couple of things, and then we're going to wait them out. And then 2 months later, 3 months later, the change has disappeared, and we feel abandoned, and we don't think it's fair that they put these new things in place, but then they just let them die. And unfortunately, that is not 100% accurate. There's sort of a symbiotic thing going on with Flavor of the Month. The directs are blaming unserious bosses, but it's the directs who are killing the changes through a form of aggressive apathy. And so as a manager—
Insubordination, I call it.
Oh, no, it's not. I think for most people, insubordination is getting in the boss's face or telling him, no, I won't do that or whatever. This is much more passive.
Just insubordination. It's a silent coup.
Yes. Yeah. So let's talk about what it is and how to solve the problem. First of all, we want to define flavor of the month. We want to walk you through how it happens. So if you're not familiar with the phrase, you'll know it when you see it, or you'll realize, hey, that happened to me 6 months ago. I wish I'd have known this podcast. And the second point we're going to make is the problem is with managers. It's not the idea, and it's not the directs that are the problem. Look, if you're a manager, it's always the directs problems. Pretty soon, we don't need you. So then we're going to recommend 3 pieces of guidance. First of all, we want you to plan and brief in advance. We want you to insist, which a lot of younger managers, I don't think I really knew this when I was younger, to insist on things and to persist and to not go away in the first month or two. And the last thing and the thing that will change everything is measuring your changes, which is not that hard to do, believe it or not.
All right, so let's get going on it. So for the purpose of this discussion, what do you mean by flavor of the month?
Yeah, so flavor of the month is a sneaky little double-edged sword that will, as the poem Jabberwocky says, snickersnack right through the most inexperienced manager's changes. And it happens for nasty, in my opinion, and selfish reasons. So here's what happens. A manager comes up with a good idea, and we use good in terms of the manager's estimation, right? Now, look, he or she isn't certain that it'll work, but he likes the idea. Okay, maybe a little bit of doubts, but overall good, worth a solid effort. So we're going to do it. Now, when I describe it like that, there are directors and they're going, we need science. Yeah, sorry, guys, that's not the world of management where you're going to get, you can't tell your boss, I'm sorry, we need a controlled experiment for 2 years before we're willing to adopt that. Yeah, you know, we need science. Or, hey, you didn't consult us. Well, this is not a collective. Nothing wrong with asking for input, listening to people. If you come up with a new idea, by the way, guys, and your people say, well, you didn't consult us. One of the things to say is, yes, I did. I heard from this guy about this. I heard from this guy about this. I heard these two people came in and talked to me about this. I put them all together, and there's a theme here, and that's why we're doing this. I didn't come and ask for permission to make the change, if that's what you're asking for. And if you're asking for that permission, if you're asking me to ask your permission every time I make a change, I'm happy to do it the moment you convince my boss that he should consult me before he makes any changes. And as soon as that happens, I'll be happy to include you in the collective decision-making around here. Okay, so the manager rolls out their idea. And let's just say the idea is accepted, okay, or tolerated. Maybe the manager gets the sense that maybe one or two of his or her people are sort of cynical about it. And maybe there's a little bit of actual eye rolling, or at least, boy, it looks like they're squirming a little bit. It's sort of like, it's virtual eye rolling. One direct seems positive. Yeah, sure, boss, this sounds good. But most are sort of neutral. And then one or two, again, is against it. It's a classic example of the ore cart. If you don't know, the ore cart is a classic change concept that we encourage you to listen to the podcast for, which by the same name. And so that big group in the middle aren't supporters, but they might become supporters if it works out. So the manager does his best to push on with the changes. And he notices that he's pushing and he's trying to get people to do it. And people are saying, yeah, we're paying attention, you know. But nothing really seems to come of the changes, at least initially. So the manager's like, I don't want to make a rookie mistake. So he keeps trying.
Of course. Why wouldn't he?
Yeah. But now he's hearing stories that, hey, you know, boss, it's been a couple of months. It's not really working. I'm not really sure we hit the nail on the head with this one. And then somebody comes in and says, you know, hey, boss, I know it's not great to hear, but you always told us to be honest with you. So as much as we all agree, it was a pretty good idea. And by the way, I hate that. People, a couple of months later, it's not working. And then the guy says, I agree, it was a pretty good idea. Like, hey, dude, we're not paid for ideas here. I don't care about your ideas. I care about the execution. And in fact, the guy who's saying, we all agree, it was a pretty good idea, he's one of the ones that's been dragging his feet.
Mm-hmm. In my experience, it's always
true. Yeah, exactly. And he says, it just doesn't seem to be gaining traction.
Right. He wants to get credit for having agreed.
Right? Yeah. And I'll tell you something else. This is the example of a direct saying, your idea is a wind up toy and you're going to wind it up and it's going to do things on its own. That's not how the world works, folks. The way the world works is you have an idea and then you implement it. And you roll up your sleeves and you get dirty and you get muddy and you get in the trenches and you sweat.
You mean great ideas just don't automatically get done? Yeah, like there's exactly. No resistance? Like just like a hot knife through butter.
Yeah, it's like pop rocks in your mouth. Boom, yay, woo, awesome. Yeah, and then somebody says, oh, I'm really sorry, boss, but it never, you know, I got it. I was willing to support it, but I didn't really get it, and it never really made sense to me. Of course, I was willing to give it a try for you. But hey, you know, proof's in the pudding. Maybe time to call it a day. So that happens over a month or two. And the manager thinks, well, they have more experience than me. Maybe it's not the right time. Maybe the idea needs to be changed 20%. And so he or she shelves the idea. And the directs applaud the wisdom of this guy. Wow, look, you know, he's willing to admit maybe he was wrong. And listen, boss, after all, discretion is the better part of valor. Good effort, sir. You know, no problem with best efforts to improve. Just didn't work out. Keep trying, youngin'. And it's a damn shame, too, because on the merits, that was a really solid idea. We could have gotten behind that. Just didn't seem to work. Who knows how ideas work? You know, you just can't tell.
Oh, my. This brings back memories. I mean, yeah, it's a little, maybe a little over the top, but
well, here's
that's the stuff you hear.
Here's the problem with this. There are people who are listening right now that think that flavor of the month is an unofficial moniker for junior or less experienced managers who don't have the courage to stick with their ideas. Okay? And that's not the case. And it is misleading. And let me tell you, the souls in hell are pulling us down in there with it. Well, what they mean is these managers come in here and they have these new ideas and they try them for a while, but these young managers, these managers, they don't stick to it. They're always jumping around from idea to idea. It's only reasonable that we directs are hesitant every time. None of these guys stick with anything long enough to see it through. And so we generally wait a couple of months before we get behind it, okay? We're just being smart. We're being efficient and effective. We're protecting ourselves from these crazy people that throw ideas off of them like, you know, sparks from a sparkler. But here's the thing, guys. I was about to say a bad word, so I'm not going to. We've been doing this 15 years now, nearly 15 years in a couple of weeks, and we've never said a bad word on air. I wonder if people think that, I wonder if Mark never speaks bad words.
give me a call, guys.
Yeah, exactly. Look, guys, flavor of the month is actually directs blaming inconstant or fickle managers for the failure of the manager's ideas, when in fact it is your direct's unwillingness to change and intentional, planned, passive-aggressive behaviors that cause your change efforts to fail. Directs, after it changes, then quietly but publicly blame the manager for not sticking to his guns, flavor of the month, boss, when it was the intention of your directs all along to sabotage your effort and to do so repeatedly over a number of efforts to create a pattern of short-term failures, which justifies ex post facto their repeated defensiveness. Years from now, those same directs will decry flavor of the month tendencies of all their managers never sticking with anything while they're out there killing good ideas, and it was them all along dragging their feet and blaming the boss and the idea. It's hogwash. So, yeah. Young managers, hear us now. The problem is not nearly so often your idea. It is your direct's natural defensiveness to new ideas coming from their boss. And the solution is still to reach for things out of your grasp and to insist and persist despite the naysayers. Folks, we're recording this in May, and probably August feels like a long time away. When will we get out of the lockdowns? How will we be feeling about our safety in the public square? But on August 18th and 19th in Chicago, we're hosting our second annual M conference. We have a slate of 10 speakers from the Manager Tools community. I'm sure you heard about last year's M conference, probably the single best event we've ever run. And we still have 3/4 of the people who attended that M conference chatting daily on our WhatsApp thread for people who have attended. It is 2 days, and it is limited to 60 people, and it is comes with a special deal. If you come, and it's $3,000 to come, but the benefit of that is you also get 10 years worth of free licenses, which is a $2,000 value. So now we're back down to $1,000 for a 2-day conference. I encourage you to come, and I'll be there, and we'll be presenting and talking about what COVID and the lockdowns and the recession mean for us in the months and probably years ahead. So come to the website and check out the M Conference. Thanks.
So the directs are engaging in this behavior, but the problem is not the directs. You're not going to solve the problem, right? We're not here to say, hey, it's the directs' problem. Sorry, guys.
Yeah, exactly.
The problem was with the managers, right? Which is have confidence in your ideas and flip and see it through.
Exactly. The problem's with us, guys. I mean, this show ought to be called the Naming Rights Convention, where the directs have gotten the naming rights to a concept and called it Flavor of the Month to blame the boss. But if the bosses have been able to name it, they would have named it Not Invented Here or Not in My Backyard, Boss. Yeah, the problem's not the idea. The problem is not the directs, although from a marketing perspective it is. The problem's with us. We're not trying to blame directs. Remember, guys, when there's a problem in your organization, search for the solution in increasingly larger concentric circles around your own desk. Now, look, something else. Our directs bring to their relationship with us all of their previous boss relationships, okay? Sad to say, right? But that's why this podcast is so popular. The parade of bosses they've had before have probably not been exceptional. By exceptional, I mean exceptional in a good way. I'm sure they've had some exceptional bad bosses. In the worst case, one or more of your directs had as their first boss a tyrant or an incompetent or someone with insufficient ethical grounding, let's call it, to be polite. Lying, cheating, you know what. And they learned a valuable lesson, and they will never unlearn it. And it's born out of what anyone would say is reasonable self-preservation, one that you and I would have learned as well. And it is, don't trust the boss, guard yourself, every man for himself. I've said this before many, many times. People say to me, hey, do you have any guidance for my kid? And I say, yeah, whatever you do, don't have a really bad first boss in your professional career, because it will mess you up. Every other boss will be looked at through the lens of fear and uncertainty and doubt and lack of trust and pain and suffering, frankly. So the problem we need to solve is ours. You know, let me go back. I want to add something to that. I mentioned this to somebody the other day. They'd never heard it before. And I guess I've been doing this so long that I assume everybody's heard everything that I've heard, because the stuff that I think of, I've said this before, once you learn something, you forget you ever didn't know it.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. So there's an experiment, an animal experiment that I'm fairly certain is apocryphal, but somebody will be able to Wikipedia for me and tell me, nope, actually it happened. You put four monkeys in a cage and you put a stepladder in there, and you, at the top of the stepladder hanging from the ceiling, you have a bunch of bananas. And the moment monkeys get hungry, they go start, you know, one quickly goes up the ladder, and he gets sprayed with a fire hose, cold, hard needles of death. And he quickly goes down the ladder. Like, wow, I don't want those bananas after all. Sour grapes on the bananas, right? Pretty soon another one tries and he gets shot, and another one tries and he gets shot. And then pretty much they all sit around. They don't try to go for the bananas because they're smart. Okay. And then you take one of those monkeys out, and the new monkey, without the training, tries to go up the ladder, and he gets water cannoned. Okay. Pretty soon he figures it out. They switch out another one. Okay. Now we're 50-50, old and new. The new guy goes, tries to get it. He gets blasted. And pretty soon he stops as well. When you get to three that have been trained, okay, and the new guy comes in, he doesn't go up the ladder. He gets beaten up before he goes up the ladder, okay, because they don't want him to do it. They keep him from going up the ladder. And then finally, you change the fourth one out, okay, and none of them try to go up the ladder. And none of them have seen anybody get water cannoned. You know, that's culture, okay? That's how culture works. It's stories passed on from people, and that's behavior. I'm not going to go try to do that. And the culture that your directs bring to your team is influenced by the previous cultures they've had. And they've learned flavor of the month. And they've learned it from cynical old timers, frankly, no offense. So, guys, the problem we need to solve, we're not going to solve the culture of the previous places our folks worked. We're not going to solve the cynical person who's had bad bosses for the previous 15, 20, 25, 30 years. The problem we need to solve is ours. It was our idea, and it didn't take root. We allowed naysayers to take charge of this narrative. What are we going to do about it? How are we going to change our tactics so that we can get reasonable ideas implemented in order to make our organization better? And so the solution to flavor of the month is not to blame our directs. It's to change how we implement, how we respond to the naysayers before, during, and after we implement.
So what would I do? I mean, say I'm a manager and I have this great idea that I'm pretty confident it's going to work. It's going to be, I don't know, like I want to do something really way out there, like one-on-ones, feedback, coaching.
Mike, you forget we have new listeners. You can't say one-on-ones are way out there. People are going to be like, what? I think my previous boss did one-on-ones. I'm talking to long-time listeners
who realize that it's not way out there at all. But yeah, good point.
Yeah. Maybe way out there is you run an extremely large technical organization, and one of the metrics you have is the number of trouble tickets that exist on your ancient spaghetti code legacy system. You have something like 650 of them, and you come in and tell your team, we're going to cut that to zero.
Yeah, I've heard that happen.
That would be way out there. Folks, someday Mike's going to tell you that story. I don't think you've ever told the whole story of your OSIS days. And it's a great one. I mean, it's absolutely, it's great. Anyway, so I will tell you the first step is plan and brief. And I'm telling you, there are people who ask me, hey, look, I'm trying to do something new as a manager. What should I do? And I say, you know what? The one thing to do is tell your people you're going to do it before you do it. And I'll tell you, the fear and uncertainty and doubt you see in people's faces because they like, oh, I'm afraid if I tell them they're going to do it, then I'm on the hook for it. Well, yeah, believe me,
right.
You're on the
hook. I wouldn't want to put myself out there, right? Yeah, I might fail. Like, then what happens?
You want them to change how they work, but you're not willing to have the courage of your convictions. So, look, guys, we're hopeful that you know that, you know, planning for any change that might happen in your systems, your processes, your structures, your procedures, your protocols, your standard operating procedures, your schedules is going to require some planning. I'm not talking days and spreadsheets and Microsoft Project, but I am talking thoughtfulness and what do you want to happen week one, week two, week three, week four, and how are you going to follow through? You know, the classic example would be not only do you brief everybody in advance, but if you're implementing a change relative to how your team runs, the change during the time of the transition period ought to be reported on each week in your weekly staff meeting. Somebody ought to have responsibility. Maybe you, maybe somebody else, but okay. So, but look, the mistake that managers make here is they think of managing the act of getting the most out of your people as a prerogative. It's up to you. It's a personal prerogative. It depends on who you are and how you like to do things. A lot of managers think that not only can they do generally what they want to do, which by the way, guys, is actually largely true. They also then think that because it's a personal prerogative, they can make those changes without thinking them through, without communicating in advance, and without persuading the people who are going to actually implement the change. We're recording this around Memorial Day weekend, and this week during Things I Think, which, by the way, is going to all of our community for whom we have an email address. And I know there's many tens of thousands of you who we don't have an email address for. We're not going to bombard you with stuff, by the way, guys, if you set up a free account. You're going to get a daily email from me during this COVID-19 experience. And in one of my daily emails this past week, I talked about Rudyard Kipling and the famous poem he wrote called Gunga Din. If you're not familiar with the poem, you're certainly familiar with the phrase, "You're a better man than I am, Gunga Din." And it's the story of Gunga Din, a water carrier in India during the time of the Raj there, the British and Indian difficulties. And if you want your people to carry your water as well as Gunga Din, you're going to have to brief them in advance. You're going to have to communicate. You're going to have to try to persuade. You can't just drop ideas on people's heads and say, well, you should do it. Okay. Now, if you think that you have a personal prerogative to manage as you want, you might have the power, but you won't get the glory. And an analogy that I use, and I got laughed at until somebody said, actually, that's really pretty good because I can separate the parts of my life that require other people and don't. It's the difference between changing how one dresses for work and whether your family eats breakfast and dinner together every day. How you dress, meaning how you get dressed, the process of it anyway, not what you choose. How you get dressed is your business. It doesn't affect anyone else, okay? And you can do pretty much what you want. You put socks on first. You put your shirt on first, okay? It's up to you. Some people are superstitious and the left sock goes on before the right. Some people pull on their socks from the top rather than gathering them around the heel first, which, by the way, in my family, you wouldn't do that if you were an adult because you would have been dead by now. My mom would have killed you. It was a sin, pulling on the socks from the top. I never understood why, but it was. And you did not mess with my mom when you were one of me and my three brothers.
Hey, if you ruin the elastic, dude, everybody knows that. That's why you don't do
okay.
it.
Yeah, okay.
And then your socks fall down around your ankles and, bad.
Yeah, so, yeah, okay.
You deserve to die.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So getting dressed, how you get dressed is one thing. But whether you eat together or not, by definition, involves other people. And it changes other people's schedules and other people's planning. The mistake we make is asking ourselves as managers, do I think I have the power to do this? Which is a reasonable thing to ask, but then we don't follow up with the other question that's super important, which is, will this affect other people? Most of us ask the first one, get a yes, and proceed. We don't ask the second one, and it's the response of our directs that we allow to kill our initiatives while blaming ourselves and our idea, meaning the directs blame us and our idea. The power we have as managers isn't absolute. Even though, as I've said before so many times, and people just argue with me all day long, we speak with the power of our CEO when we make changes in our team. You may not believe that, folks, but
it's true.
It's a principle. It's like gravity.
Unless you're one of those people who just go around just completely ignoring what your boss says and assume there are no consequences to that.
Yeah.
Not me. Probably not any of our listeners. So probably our direct people say
that. Reminds me of a line from a poem when you think about, you know, people doing what they want and then thinking nothing's going to happen. I generally find that in situations like that, the response will be swift and sure. So when our change involves our directs, guys, and 99% of the time it does, we have a responsibility for planning and communicating in advance. Now, look. This is not a cast. We're going to cover all the steps in creating a bulletproof plan, but we want to give you some planning thoughts, okay? And we're going to start with a couple of really simple ones that most people miss, okay? They talk about the idea, they talk about implementing the idea, but they don't ask themselves in their planning, sitting down into the day, how will your behavior as a manager be different under the change? What specifically will you do differently? Not what you intend to change in terms of outcomes, not what you mean about the change or why it's strategically interesting, not what you want, not what you hope. What things, what tasks will you do differently and how often and how will they be different? That's the first thing you need to be able to answer in your planning. The second thing, and obviously this is the whole point of this, How will you expect the behaviors of your directs to change? Same rules, right? What things will they be doing differently, and how will they be doing them differently? In other words, we will no longer do the Tuesday morning report, and that means the Tuesday morning report will not be covered in our Thursday ops meeting. We will now wait until Wednesday afternoon between 2 and 5, and we will update that document. That document will be automatically sent to everybody, and it will be on the screen when we have our Thursday ops meeting, and we will discuss changes in week-to-week numbers. Okay? That's the kind of thing that people forget. You need to think about your and your team's behaviors as well. How are you measuring these behaviors now? You need to know that. And it, the answer may not be, you're not, maybe you're not. And then how will you measure them in the future? If you're not measuring them at all, then measuring almost anything at all is better. On the other hand, if you're measuring task A with measurement A, and you're recommending we go to task B, and we're going to have measurement B, when you change your measures, you lose almost all credibility regarding the benefit of the change, okay? As a general rule, you want to keep the old measure so it will reflect the improvement. And then after the improvement is clear and everybody gets it, then maybe you can think about changing. You can't always do that, but that's generally something I try to do. Next, how will you communicate? Persuade, not tell. If you want to sell, ask, don't tell. How will you communicate or persuade your directs to go along with this effort? You don't just get to drop the idea and say, do it. Well, you can, and then you'll be greeted with flavor of the month, okay? How will the change be reported upon? So we're talking about behaviors, measurements, communication, and reporting. What efforts will you take to proactively communicate to everybody what is happening as things change? Okay, that's reporting. Okay, how will reporting change once the new steady state occurs? And look, all that, okay, even if you don't get the change planning exactly right, we can make an enormous improvement in our success rate for changes by following our previous guidance covered in Brief Before You Change. And I say this all the time to people. And when we do effective manager conferences, we say, okay, we're going to change one-on-ones, feedback, coaching, delegation, so on. And every single step when we roll out the Trinity, and there's numerous podcasts in the, I think there's an entire map of the universe category called Rolling Out the Trinity. And the podcast is called the idea is never introduce a change without first taking the time to introduce that change. Meaning you have to tell people what you're going to do before you do it. Okay?
Yeah.
So that's plan and brief.
I love that list. I mean, you know I love checklists. I'm a pilot, right? So I like checklists. They keep me alive, right? Mm-hmm. So there's the value of show notes right there. Just copy that checklist and put it in Evernote or whatever you use.
People don't think about behaviors and measuring and communicating and reporting. And if you get those right, everything else is easier. Everything. We end this show with our new tradition. We want to say thank you to one of our long-term licensees, Warren Johnson, whom I think lives in Michigan and is in the healthcare industry. Warren has been correspondent with me over the years, making suggestions. I'm pretty sure, Warren, you're a big fan of Horseman's Laws. You've been with us nearly since the beginning, almost 15 years. And Warren, we want to say thank you. During this time in Manager Tools history and evolution, it is long-term licensees like Warren and many other thousands who are keeping the doors open, frankly, as our public conference business and our client conference business have gone to virtually zero, as you might imagine. So Warren, thanks for your years of professional relationship with us. We appreciate it.
Thanks, everyone. That's it for this week. We'll finish this cast up next week. In the meantime, have a great one, folks.